This is Local Motion here on KVNF. Thanks for joining us this evening. I'm Travis Bubinick, and tonight on the program, we're taking a look at the plight of rural movie theaters across Colorado. The major players in the film industry have decided that starting this year, they'll only be distributing their films digitally to theaters, which is fine for bigger chain theaters and busy metro centers, but it's a whole different world full of challenges and costly investments for small, mom-and-pop-style rural movie theaters across the state. The classic 35mm films of old are on their way out and digital films are on their way in, which means theaters have to buy digital projectors as well. And these things aren't cheap. They can run anywhere from $60,000 to $120,000, and that doesn't necessarily include new sound systems, screens, or other equipment that's needed for the upgrade. The Paradise Theater in Paonia is one of the small theaters in Colorado facing this uphill battle to keep the doors open and the screen lit up. To talk about how the theater's dealing with these challenges and what the road ahead looks like, I'm joined by Amy DeLuca. She's the manager at the Paradise. Amy, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So as some of our listeners might already know, the context here is that the state of Colorado late last year announced it was giving out $200,000 in grants to small theaters like the Paradise to help them make this transition to digital. The Paradise is moving forward with that transition, but first, I want to clear up some details here because I've heard a bunch of different numbers involved with this thing. How much money did the theater actually get in these state grants, and how much of these upgrade costs is that going to cover?
The state awarded the Paradise. We're one of the higher level recipients in the grant fund, and our amount is $20,000. It is a match grant, so we need to come up with the funds to meet it in order to receive the grant. And
Okay.
It will not be enough to actually make the digital conversion, or we'll need around $60,000 to complete the process because we do have some equipment that's adequate for the conversion. And so we're on the lower end of the conversion cost. Some of the cinemas out there are starting at zero. So we're in pretty good shape considering.
What are your total conversion costs going to look like?
We're looking at around $65,000 for our conversion, and it would include receiving the $20,000 from the state.
So you've got potentially $20,000 if you can come up with the other $20,000. Have you managed to do that yet?
We actually are getting ready to launch a Kickstarter campaign at the end of the month. Our goal will be $43,500, which will allow us to receive the match and then make up the difference that we'll need to complete the conversion.
Right. And do you have any sort of deadline for getting this money to meet that matching grant?
Well, we probably already should have had the money. They've been really generous with working with us. They understand our demographic. They understand we're all volunteer driven and we're doing our best to make it happen. We have been communicating with them closely so that they know where we are in the process. The state did a group crowdsourcing campaign. We decided to go independent because we felt like we would have a broader reach and more success working within our local community, so that folks would know that anything that they offered to donate would benefit right here at the Paradise.
Now, let me ask you just from your perspective, because hearing that you get $20,000 from the state, but you still need another 40 some odd thousand to make this conversion, I don't know whether that state money is just a drop in the hat or whether that's a really generous contribution. So, I mean, is the state doing enough? Should they be doing more? How big of a deal is this for you to get that grant money?
Well, for us, it's a really big deal. As I said, different people who applied for the grant got different sums of money, and the largest sum available was $20,000. And so I feel really lucky that we were able to get the largest sum allotted. Again, there's various criteria that allowed us to be eligible. And so due to the extended reach that we have in the North Fork Valley and all the way to Delta County, the Paradise is a destination for people. And so we have a much wider net of folks and families that we serve. And so I think that really helped us in our grant application process.
Is that something they talked to you about when you were applying for the grant? Like, how many people do you serve?
Yep. They asked what our reach is, and so there's lots of different questions on the application, and so all that criteria gets factored in.
So even if you do get all of this money together, if your Kickstarter campaign is completely successful and you install this new projector, you start running more first-run movies digitally, you still have to get people in the door to make that money back, I'm assuming. So I guess what I want to ask you is, do you see there still being challenges ahead, even after this equipment is installed?
Yes, I do. The digital conversion will expand our programming at the theater, so we'll be able to have other things that we haven't had in the past, which is really wonderful part of the new technology. And we do indeed still need to get people coming to the theater. One of the ways we know we can be successful with that is expanding our family programming. Recently, we had, for 2 weeks over the holidays, we had the film Frozen, Disney animated film, which is now getting tons of awards and accolades. And we really saw over 500 people in 2 weeks came to the movies at the theater, and that was a great success. A lot of families really asked for more family programming. We do our best to bring that in as often as there are good releases out there. The films are really, that really is the key, I believe, to having the broadest access to the community, whether they're family or doesn't matter what the subject matter is. I think most people would say they love movies. And so we just, we need people to support it. We need people to come to the events. We need people to come into the movies. And we also want people to support the theater for venue rentals, which is our success is measured on three areas, each vitally important to our bottom line. One's movies, one is venue rentals, and the other is what we do on concessions. So they're all necessary to keep the theater open.
You have more access basically to a wider variety of films because you have the digital equipment, or you will have it?
Yes. And just the programming at large. There's all different things that the digital can offer you beyond movies. For example, there's A Night at the Met, which is the Metropolitan Opera House in New York. And that's like the Wheeler Opera House in Aspen. They do season tickets to the Met. And that's something you could come in, you can sit in the theater and feel like you're in an actual seeing a live lyric opera. Huh. There's a pretty wide range of programming similar to that we could offer. They could have themes, and it's really endless, not to mention the digital conversion in terms of shipping, and it's on a hard drive, and so we're saving costs on shipping films to and fro. 35 mil is heavy and expensive to produce and ship, so it's kind of a scale of, you know, you lose one thing to gain something else.
That's what I've been reading, too, in some reports and comments from people in the industry saying that the reason we're making this switch to digital is that it's more convenient in terms of access to films, but that it's also cheaper for theaters. But I was talking just yesterday with the owner of the Egyptian Theater in Delta and the True View drive-in as well. Her name is Jeannie. And she was telling me that latter part about it being cheaper to get these films is not necessarily always true. Have you run into that?
Well, I haven't run into it yet because we haven't had to do it. But when you're getting a hard drive like that in the mail, you know, maybe you're paying overnight for FedEx and that's $25. And, or, you know, I don't really know. I can't really answer. I don't know. But I think it can be, it can be misleading because it's you're getting a piece of technology in the mail, and that's has to be protected.
So just like pretty much any other major hardware technology system that you purchase, you usually have to buy a support system for it too. So are you looking into those costs when it comes to buying all this new equipment? Do you have to pay for somebody to come out here and keep that thing up and running, or are you going to have somebody in-house that knows how to do that?
Well, hopefully a combination of both. The digital packages for purchasing with the help of the state and their recommendations, they do come with tech service, training, et cetera. So we will have a combination of outside support and in-house support for the tech piece.
Now, I want to sort of step back and talk about the idea of these new movies being digital only, because I have to be honest, I don't entirely really even know what that means. Because like we were just talking about, you've already been showing Frozen at the theater this year, but 2014 is supposed to be the time when this is digital only. So how are you getting a hold of that film?
Well, that film was a 2013 picture, so it was shot on 35 mil.
Oh, okay.
But it was also produced for digital. So the studio, it's costly for the studios to print the 35 mil films. But without being in the inner circle of Walt Disney, I can say that they have a certain system where they can predict the success of how a film's going to do, particularly a holiday release animated family film. They have a pretty good idea they're going to do well. So knowing that we've got this deadline of going into the next year, they produced enough prints of 35 mil for us to receive them. The way you'll be able to tell the difference in terms of watching a digital movie versus a 35 mil is it a lot of people don't understand what that 35 mil is, but when you remember the old 35 millimeter cameras where you bought the roll of film and you threaded up your camera and you wound it up. Well, that's what 35 millimeter motion picture film looks like too. But what can happen is when you're a small town theater like we are, a 35 millimeter print could have circulated, who knows, 100 times before it gets to us because we're mom and pop, right? We're not going to have numbers at the box office of thousands of people over a couple week run. So by the time we get a 35 mil print, it can be in pretty rough shape. And one of those things is scratches down the film. It's like an emulsion scratch. It leaves a line. There can look like fuzz running across the image on the screen or any number of things that would show the wear and tear. So digital would never come across that way. It'd be absolutely crystal clear and sharp picture as if it's happening right there in your living room.
Interesting. So it sort of equalizes the playing field from the small theaters to the big chains in terms of the kind of experience you're going to get at the theater watching the movies.
Right. The quality of the images are really spectacular, and we wouldn't have, again, since it's coming, you know, with this new technology, we don't have that wear and tear revealed once it hits the screen.
So there's this transitional period where maybe some of the big Hollywood films are still going to be 35 mil and all digital. I keep hearing this phrase that the industry is going all digital. What does that mean? I mean, because I understand that some of the big Hollywood producers are saying, no, we're only going to be distributing these blockbusters, these first run movies digitally. But I mean, surely there are some smaller independent movie houses that are going to continue distributing in the film format.
It's really hard to say without actually knowing some of those people. And I think that if someone like Martin Scorsese said he was going to do a film on 35 millimeter, I don't think a studio is going to turn him away for their film.
Right.
But what happens on the receiving end is either you have to pay for that print because they still can produce the prints, is my understanding. They still can. It's just the willingness to and the expense they're in. So I would imagine that if somebody was really excited about that film that they knew came out on 35 mil and they still had their equipment, if they could pay for it, I'm sure they could get it. Again, you'd have to fact check me on that, but that's my understanding of how it would work. Right now, like we have our Cabin Fever Winter Film Series, and that's primarily art house and indie films. And even with booking those films, some of them have come out in the last year. Some of them were produced on 35 mil, but some of the smaller indie producers and filmmakers, they're shooting digitally, but they're producing Blu-ray and DVD style films so that they can make sure that they can get the exposure they want for their film. So I think it's forcing filmmakers and smaller indie companies to get creative. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I mean, already with booking some of these films that I've been working on this winter and spring, that I've had my booker say on the other end, oh, I only have three prints of that, meaning 335 mil prints. And so where does the Paradise Theater fall in a queue like that? You know, are we going to get a 35 mil print over somebody in a bigger city? Probably not.
It's interesting what you said about smaller indie filmmakers, you know, going digital only as well, because I was sort of thinking about it the reverse way that, oh, this prevalence of digital from the big Hollywood movies and sort of them setting the standards for the equipment is going to push some of the smaller guys out. But I guess, I mean, it is expensive to produce on 35 millimeter. And if somebody can do that digitally, they, you know, presumably have more exposure or just as much exposure as a blockbuster does.
Exactly. It's much more economical for smaller filmmakers to shoot digitally as well. There is this romance around 35 mil. It's like the difference between a CD and vinyl. It's very, very comparable in terms of an experience or a quality. Like some folks really just love to hear that crackle of an LP, and not that you necessarily get the crackle on 35 mil, but it does feel different. It's a different kind of experience, and I'm not really sure what the big movie houses are going to do with all of that, all those 35 millimeter films. I don't know if they just all end up in a warehouse in Culver City or what, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with those prints.
Yeah, we might see the rise of boutique theaters, you know, showing movies in only 35 millimeter.
It would be cool. I think it would be cool to be able to do it.
Let me ask you one last thing. You know, as small theaters like the Paradise across the state start trying to convert to digital, some of them are deciding they can't do it, or maybe just realizing it's more of a challenge than they thought it would be. And in that process, you know, they're sort of rethinking what these theater spaces can be used for besides your classic movie watching place. The Paradise is doing some of that as well, yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah, as I said before, the theater has been a movie house. It's been an events venue for live music and theatrical productions. And that's a really huge part of our programming. It's very important to our community and to the theater being a successful business. And so I think the events piece is really critical for us personally. And it's also not enough to keep the place operational.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Motion here on KVNF. I've been joined by Amy DeLuca. She's the manager for the Paradise Theater. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Today, we're talking about how small rural movie theaters in Colorado are dealing with the industry-mandated transition to digital, the costs, the struggles, and what the future looks like for these mom-and-pop businesses. For a statewide perspective on the issue, we talked earlier today with Catherine Carell. She's the executive director of Downtown Colorado, Inc., a group that has launched a campaign called Save Our Screens, which is helping some of these smaller theaters come up with the money to make the switch to digital. So just to get started, can you tell me a bit about how the Save Our Screens campaign got put together?
So the Save Our Screens project really came together based on one of DCI member communities, Brush, the city of Brush, and their Chamber Main Street program. They have a great advocate in Ron Prasher, who's the director of that program, and he came to us and told us the story of their movie theater owned by Joe Machetta, who is just a great guy who loves the community, loves movies, and he's been running that movie theater for some time. And Joe hosted us when we were in Brush for an event in April of 2012. And at that time, he told a little bit about, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen with the industry and converting to digital projectors. And so everybody at our event heard about it, and we got interested in it. And so it was really brought to our attention that theaters are going to need to convert to digital projectors. And for theaters that are really business-driven and entrepreneurial, they might have planned for that. But for a lot of these theaters that are really involved just to be a part of the community and to continue showing movies at the movie house and really, you know, just kind of being that citizen that is a part of the gathering spaces and the vibrancy of small town rural Colorado, they might not have the business savvy to really have thought about how are we going to afford a projector that might cost anywhere from $60,000 to $100,000. We started having coalition meetings with folks from the Office of Film at the Office of Economic Development and International Trade, the Department of Local Affairs, the Main Street Program over there, Gates Foundation, Betcher Foundation, El Pomar, just so many different groups, the Small Business Development Centers, USDA, Rural Development, who we partner with on a lot of our stuff. All these groups started coming to these meetings and really showing a lot of interest in how to save our screens and how to get involved with these theaters. And Brush remained involved, and, you know, Joe Machetta and Ron Prasher were at all of those meetings. And we had a lot of support from another community in Walsenburg. The Barriers were coming and really joining the meetings and adding a lot of input. And what we were getting is it was interesting to see because the Walsenburg Theater is run by a nonprofit and right. The Brush Theater is a for-profit. And so what came out of those meetings was really the idea that foundations money can go to support the nonprofits, but that in the instance of a for-profit theater, there was no financial assistance available. And most people would say, well, that makes sense. They're a business. But what we found is that these are businesses that are really doing this as a part of the community. So it's not just a business. It's a business that serves a public function for that community. And they keep their prices low so that the kids can go there on their first dates and that the families can bring all of their family to the theater, and, you know, generation after generation enjoys these theaters. But it's really a private entity that serves a public function. And so really thinking about how do we support that in our state, I think was the driving question that really brought about this project.
So we talked earlier to the manager of the Paradise Theater, that's one of the small theaters in our listening area that's working on getting this new digital projector equipment installed. From what I understand, your organization is working on a statewide network for rural movie theaters to share ideas and advice after they get this equipment installed and after all the grant money is dished out. How is that project coming along, and what is this network going to look like when it's finished?
The idea with the network for the theaters is really just through the course of this process, we have noticed that they've never spoken to other theater owners. So if we can help provide a time and a place, whether that be over the phone, through our website connections, or at our educational events, where they can come together and talk to each other and say, you know, okay, so we got our projectors. I bought, you know, this type of projector, and I bought this type of projector, and how's that working? And, I mean, it was really interesting in some of the first conversations to have some of the theater owners who had already purchased projectors on the phone with theater owners who were looking at purchasing them, because apparently digital projectors and some of these sound systems, some of them work better at different altitudes. So in a state like Colorado, where one community might be, you know, a mile high and one might be 10,000 feet, the technology that you buy really makes a difference in terms of the climate that you're in. Also, some of these projectors and different technology can be impacted by popcorn exhaust, which are things that you never think about. But in the course of these conversations, the theater owners really got to kind of learn from each other's experience. And so I think that just furthering independent theaters and giving them the ability to just learn from each other and identify best practices. And if we can provide that platform, I think that that's a very valuable thing for them, just based on my experience working on this for the last, you know, year and a half or so.
Popcorn exhaust. I definitely never would have thought of that one.
Yeah, that was one of those things. We were on the call, and the guy said the popcorn exhaust negatively impacts the technology. I thought, well, you know, that's something serious that these theater owners really need to know, because everybody's got popcorn.
Let me ask you about those projectors, the cost of them in particular. As you mentioned earlier, these things can cost anywhere from $60,000 to $100,000, $120,000, and that's not necessarily including, you know, the new screens, sound systems that some of these theaters might have to install. Generally speaking, how expensive has it been for the theaters you've been working with to get this equipment installed? Are they seeing the upper end or the lower end of that cost spectrum?
We've gotten quite a bit of variety in terms of the quotes that we've gotten. So we saw proposals anywhere from $75,000 to $35,000. The $35,000 was really looking at kind of a standardized projector and the concept of a bulk purchase. So if we were to, you know, use a standard projector for several auditoriums, they can bring the price down. And there were thoughts that maybe doing that would also reduce the price of maintenance over time.
Let me ask you again about the theaters you've been working with. What does the landscape look like right now as we head into 2014 with these rural theaters? I mean, how many of them are moving forward with this transition to digital? And how many roughly are just deciding that it's maybe not feasible for them to try to move forward with this new technology?
Of the ones that we've been working with, we didn't really have any that just threw in the towel. What we did have was that that divide between ownership types. For theaters that were nonprofit owned, they were able to access financial support from more sources. So they were able to get grants both from Veteran Gates as well as the Office of Economic Development, which meant they most of them were able to get over the top and buy their projector. So several of them are in process of purchasing. What we came down to was about seven that were still needing to fundraise. Some of those were nonprofits, but even though they got additional support, they hadn't done any fundraising on their own up until that point. It's been really inspirational to talk to them because some of them, you talk to the owner and they say, you know, when I heard about this conversion, I was about to just throw in the towel and give up and close my doors. And then you started contacting us and telling us that there might be support. And once they got that initial grant, they were just motivated to go out into the community. So they're having bake sales and, you know, the theater in Flagler, they have bake sales and they make cinnamon rolls, but they call them cinnamon reels. And they, you know, give them away to the community through the bake sale, but their bake sales are raising, you know, $3,500. You know, it's really created this crazy energy in these communities where, you know, there's somebody driving it, but the whole community is getting behind the process.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Locomotion. We've been speaking with Catherine Correll. She's the executive director for Downtown Colorado, Inc., which has a Save Our Screens campaign going to help rural movie theaters across the state adjust to the transition to digital projection screens that the film industry is mandating starting this year. So, Catherine, thanks so much again for joining us.
And thank you, Travis.
You're listening to Locomotion here on KVNF. We've been talking about the future for rural theaters in Colorado, dealing with the industry-mandated switch to digital films. If you missed any of today's episode or you'd like to hear old episodes of the program, you can always find them online at kvnf.org. Stay tuned for The Treatment coming up next. For KVNF, I'm Travis Bubinick.